You're listening to Driving Law, a podcast by Kyla Lee about all things related to the rules of the road.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Driving Law. I am Kyla Lee at Acumen Law, and with me, my co-host, Paul Doroshenko.
Yes, here in the office, we're recording, finally, using our actual correct mic. Oh, maybe we did that last week, too.
I was in Ohio.
You were in Ohio. Yeah. So you've been very busy. You've been all over the place.
I was in four time zones in 7 days.
Wow.
I still don't know what day it is.
No wonder you've got that like upper elite status with Air Canada. So many flights every year.
So many.
So what do they do for you now on Air Canada when you fly? Do they like...
They pull me out of the line and they roll a red carpet down the aisle of the plane. And as I walk by, they cheer and throw confetti at me.
No roses, though.
No.
All right. Well, I mean, yeah.
There had to be budget cutbacks after COVID.
Yeah. You'll have to. Well, I'm sure they'll bring that back for you. Do they still have that glass of champagne ready for you when you arrive on the plane?
But that's actually a real thing, though.
I know. I'm just asking you.
Yes,
if they
we do.
I know I had that once.
Because you were traveling with me.
Yes, I was.
Yeah, you were booked on my ticket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a glass of champagne, Miss Lee, and whoever you are who's traveling with her.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, good for you that you have that that experience. And we did end up traveling not on Air Canada back from Salt Lake City this week because quite unexpectedly, we were asked to present at the Society of Toxicologists annual general meeting.
Yeah.
Which was
a big conference, which and a 90-minute panel.
It was great because I wanted to go to this conference for years. And I wrote to them years ago and asked if I could come. And they said, you're not a student or working in the field, a researcher. And so you're not a toxicologist. And so you can't come. And I was all disappointed. And then here, you know, we get invited because there was another lawyer who was supposed to present and give a legal perspective on roadside screening of impaired drivers. And so that lawyer couldn't go, and Kyla and I were invited and went and presented. Big room, lots of people.
Pinch hitters,
and apparently very well received. So looks like we're going to be invited back for the next one. So
Fingers crossed.
So Salt Lake City for like 48 hours.
Yeah.
But
I found it really funny that I went from Whitehorse, Yukon.
Yes.
To Ohio.
Yes.
Columbus, Ohio.
Yes.
And then from Columbus, Ohio to Salt Lake City. And the first thing I did in Salt Lake City was go to a restaurant called White Horse.
Yeah. And that's where I met you there.
Yeah.
And it was a good restaurant. The food was excellent. I had the salad niçoise, which is my preference. And it was really, really a wonderful salad. So White Horse Restaurant in downtown Salt Lake City, highly recommended on the Driving Law podcast. Shout out to them.
Okay. We have a lot to cover this week because there's been so much crazy shit happening in the world of driving law.
Yeah, I don't know how we're going to cover it all. So let's get moving into it quickly.
First thing, there is a pilot program being run with the University of Alberta in Alberta with Alberta drivers. And they've got these, you know, those Vancouver Police Department spy cam trailers where they have those cameras mounted really high up and they can do a 360 view of the street.
Yes.
They have essentially something like that, but it's got a high definition camera pointing at where windshields would be on cars passing by on the roadway to look inside the cars and see whether drivers are using their electronic devices. And then the photos are analyzed using AI, and AI will determine whether or not a driver is using an electronic device. It then goes to a human for them supposedly to review it, and if they are using the device, the driver could be issued a ticket.
AI is the red herring. You know, AI is just the headline that gets people. It's not really that they're using AI. Basically, this is a photo intrusion into your vehicle. And then the, you know, computer software will identify whether or not it looks like you're probably on your phone, at which point it'll then go to a person who will look at it and say, oh, look, we got this guy on their phone, and then mail them a ticket. And that is really
fucked up.
That's fucked up. I mean, that's essentially what it is. It's not
legal term.
It's not an issue of AI, right? Like that's how they're trying to spin it. We've got this new technology that's AI. No,
it's just
they can spy on people in their cars before, right? It's just a series of cameras looking through your window, getting a snapshot of you on your phone. And we know that they're doing this in the UK. What amazes me is that Albertans, so resistant to anything government, if it's federal, seem to just be totally willing to give up their privacy in so many respects.
Yeah. How is Danielle Smith on board with this?
Well, I mean, she's not been asked about it, but she, you know, from their perspective, so long as they're capturing, people who are NDP supporters, then...
So it's AI scanning for an electronic device and an NDP membership card or donation.
It's hard to believe how creepy the Alberta government is. It's just hard to believe. When I lived under Ralph Klein, I thought the government was pretty creepy, but this is like high level creepy. It's spooky and frightening.
Got a photo of Naheed Nenshi. You're done.
Oh, well, that's probably their hope. I mean, he's the biggest threat to them. So this is what they're rolling out, and the way that they, characterize these things when they roll it out. Again, the red herring is to try and draw your attention to the AI aspect, not the huge privacy intrusion aspect. And you think of like, you're in your vehicle. You know, there's been times I was in my vehicle. I had surgery. I'm like, sort of half exposed. Like, I don't want somebody looking into my...
Why did you tell me that?
Well,
I have a very overactive imagination. No, I can't look at you.
Not indecent exposure or something, but still, like, the point is that you have a still sense of privacy and not to be violated by the state.
Yeah.
And yes, there's cameras everywhere. And yes, when there's something heavy duty goes on, the police are coming to look to see whether or not there's
Think about all the things that you could have in your vehicle, not exposing yourself, but like, you might have personal papers on your lap. You might have something open sitting on the passenger seat on your iPad to an email that contains sensitive information. What if you're a lawyer and you've got a client file sitting on your seat and all of a sudden the government can see that through your windshield?
The file label and have a photograph of it. They wouldn't have it otherwise, except for this fact that it's a snapshot.
Yeah, you might be planning a big constitutional litigation or something.
Sometimes you have heavy duty discussions with people, passengers in your cars. I've been as a child bawling my eyes out in a car, with my parent or whoever. They get you in the stressful situation. I had to drive home. I drove home after my father passed away. I was crying in my truck. I don't want that invasion of privacy of the state having photographs of me in my vehicle like that for the sake of trying to catch me in a moment that I'm at sort of my weakest.
You know that if this pilot project is a success, which inevitably they will tout it out to be, it's not like they're going to turn around and be like, this was not good.
Well, sure, they want to sell the project. Right.
But if this is a success, what's going to be the logical extension of using this technology to identify distracted drivers. They're going to say, well, we can now also confidently use the technology to, in conjunction with ICBC's facial recognition database or whatever licensing authority, they all have facial recognition databases that can identify you based on your photo and make sure that you are the person you say you are. And all of a sudden now, people are going to be getting tickets that aren't just registered owner tickets that don't go on the driving record and don't have points for camera violations like speeding and red lights. They're going to get driver tickets.
And, the problem is that you don't know when you get this ticket a month later. And this is a funny thing. You and I have sort of discussed this, and there has been an evolution in the law on this. A friend of mine, long before I was a lawyer, used to complain about photo radar tickets in Alberta, which were pretty rare. I mean, it wasn't something that I never got a photo radar ticket back then. Now you can drive 15 minutes and get 4 photo radar tickets in Edmonton. But, part of his complaint was, look, by the time I get that ticket, I can't have taken notes or anything about anything. And it makes it impossible for me to testify.
And you don't know whether
it's a setup.
Your
for that reason.
Call was an emergency call. Like I called to report impaired drivers and dangerous drivers from time to time. But if you were to ask me like the date and time that I made the call, I'm not going to remember.
Was that? And then you have to prove it. The onus is on you to prove it, right? Like if a police officer pulls you over and you're on the phone, you can say, look, I'm on the phone with 911 right now because of that guy right there who just drove away and you didn't pay attention to him.
Yeah.
So yes, this is a concern to me, and I hate the way that it's rolled out without any public discussion or criticism of it. Right, like yep. Even the news stories didn't seek the other side. And there's lots of times I don't think you need to seek the other side on things. The Flat Earth Society doesn't have to be consulted every time a rocket launches, and blows up or something like that. But there are times, and this is one of them, where I think it's appropriate to have a public discussion about whether or not we as a society want to be policed by robots.
Yeah. Now,
at least RoboCop had some morals.
Speaking of RoboCop, Paul, if it's a bad enough privacy intrusion that the police or the government can take pictures of you inside your vehicle and identify what's in your hands or on your lap, imagine this privacy intrusion that's currently being proposed by a Saanich counselor on Vancouver Island.
Okay.
Let's hear it. Person, Teal Phelps, I believe is his name, is proposing, and Saanich Council has voted to explore this, to direct staff to explore a feasibility study on the use of an audio recording camera to listen for noisy vehicles.
This has been the bee in the bonnet of this particular counselor for some time, has been pushing this. This is going to be.
And he lives on that street with that guy who was like blaring his radio.
Maybe. I don't know. You think you go into politics and you want to do something good for society. And most people go into politics there. Surprisingly, most people go into politics because they're kind of zealots. I prefer people who are sort of dragged into politics rather than those who are the ones who really want to do something. And this seems to be his bee in his bonnet. And I don't know. Like I'm with him with respect to the complaint, right? I hate the noisy vehicles. I hate the noisy motorcycles. I hate the cars with the modified exhausts that are becoming increasingly a problem with all of these electronic capabilities to put valves in the middle of your exhaust pipe that nobody can see. And I like the idea of it being a registered owner ticket for that. I don't like the idea of people getting a ticket on their record for that. And the problems I have with it are when it's police enforcement, that there's no objective measure used. And so that's why I don't like it, you know, as a ticket that has some true penal consequences.
Okay, well, here's my problem with it. These cameras and microphones, in order to detect whether or not somebody is violating the law, are going to have to be constantly listening. You're standing underneath the camera having a very private conversation with your spouse. The camera's listening to you. You are walking your dog and spilling your heart out to your dog about something that's going on in your life. The camera's listening to you. You're on the phone, pulled over to the side of the road to take a phone call from your lawyer. The camera's listening to you. The camera is constantly listening to you. That is a huge intrusion.
I have a one-word response for you, and that is, bah.
Now, why are you more concerned with a photograph of something that could be seen from the roadway than something that could be heard?
Picture is worth 1,000 words. No, I'm going to tell you why. Here's my issue there. Okay, so just like my phone can start as soon as I mention a certain name. It rhymes with the city in the lower mainland or sounds the same as a city in the lower mainland of British Columbia, my phone will start talking to me. My phone is listening to me for that purpose.
Yeah, you can turn it off.
Same with my Google Home Mini. But those are things that have to be able to hear my voice. Now, this software or this potential thing can be set up to just hear loud noises, and that is when it triggers it, and certain loud noises and can be used not necessarily to record the sound, although that could be a possibility too, but only be triggered in those circumstances. Now, in the U.S., they had, in Chicago, I think it was at some point, set up some sort of devices that could triangulate where a gun had been fired on the basis of the sound. And I don't know where that went with respect to the law. I'd be curious about that because I would think it would be a similar considerations as this. But again, You know, this is something that is recording, I'm hoping, just the loud sounds of a vehicle and not the discussion you have with your dog.
But there's, again, also lots of reasons why you might legitimately make a loud sound, right? Loud sounds from your vehicle are not prohibited. It is unnecessary noise that's prohibited. And the camera can't distinguish between noise which is necessary, such as a loud revving the engine because you have to very quickly take an evasive maneuver to avoid an imminent collision, or a loud honk of the horn to alert somebody to something, or even honking your horn because there's a deer in the road and you want to scare the deer off the road so that you don't get in a collision with a deer. You know, there are legitimate reasons why you might need to make noise with your vehicle, and the camera can't distinguish that.
That's true, too. But of course, AI is going to get better at figuring out what the loud sound is. And of course, somebody's still going to have to review it to determine whether or not.
Well, then they're going to have to hear the sound.
Yes. And that might be a circumstance where they hear somebody screaming.
Now, here's the other.
True.
Here's the other problem. If you have the camera's obviously not mounted in the road. The camera's going to be mounted somewhere away from the road, above the road, maybe on a telephone pole, something like that. To hear a noise that's coming from a car that meets the, I think it's 90 decibels threshold to trigger the camera, it's going to actually have to listen for something that is louder than 90 decibels because of the distance, right? They're going to...
Well, they can put microphones at different locations, a different location than the camera.
Sure, but when you have something that is closer to the microphone than a car would be, is the camera going to pick up something that's closer to the microphone that isn't actually the sound of a car?
This is a technological issue. It's not a.
Yeah, but
something
you're going to be punished on the basis of technological issue.
Well,
you don't like being governed by robots, except for this.
Yeah, I don't like being governed by robots by intrusive photographs inside my vehicle.
Don't like red light cameras or speed cameras either. You don't believe in photo radar. You've criticized all of those things on this podcast.
Yes, I have. But there are circumstances where I have very little criticism about the photo red light tickets as they have been deployed in British Columbia, as opposed to Alberta, where they're being used for speed enforcement. And speed is your speedometer might tell you that you're going the speed limit and you may be going over the speed limit. And lots of this, you're moving all the time and it's impossible to be perpetually ensuring that you're precisely, you know, within that realm of just being under the speed limit. Going through a red light is either a really bad judgment call, and I don't have a whole lot of forgiveness about that because you've got to learn it, or people defying it, or a mistake. And in all those three circumstances, it's so very dangerous that I think the discouragement factor weighs in favor of these, at high-risk intersections of these cameras. Personally, get me on a different day of the week and I might feel differently. I will tell you, they've had them, what, for now 3-4 years, I think, and I've never got one. So,
why?
Well, there you go.
I'm not going, I know what the threshold is, though, to go through the intersection, and I'm not going that speed.
I know what the threshold is, too, because you told me, and one of the ministers told you, but the point is that I don't speed.
It actually came out later, but we're not going to. We're out of respect for having been told it, and off the record basis, I'm not going to refer to the information out there that exists about what it is.
I will tell you that if you're 10 kilometers an hour over the speed limit, you're not likely to get a speeding ticket going through an intersection. But
anywhere,
run the red light, you're going to get a photo red light ticket.
Okay, before we move on to our ridiculous driver of the week, I did want to talk about...
And there's like 7 other topics that we're going to give up.
I know, but there's a big Supreme Court of Canada decision that came out today that is very important in the context of judicial review and accident cases.
Oh.
So, and this may have some implication for some of the rules in British Columbia, because of course we know, we've talked about this lots on the podcast, especially with Eric McGracken, that the civil resolution tribunal decisions are limited in scope in your reviewability of them. There's no right of appeal and there's a right of judicial review, but the things on which you can judicially review it are constrained by statute. So this case, this is Yattar and TD Insurance Meloche Monix.
Meloche.
Sure.
I don't know. I have no idea.
So Ms. Yatar was in an accident in 2010. Her insurer pays her the benefits, and then they tell her later, they give her a letter, and they're like, actually, whoopsie-daisy, we've decided that we're not going to pay you your benefits until you give us a certificate showing that you're actually disabled. And so there's a dispute resolution process that you can go through like a civil resolution type tribunal. She goes through the process. Her income benefits get reinstated, but her housekeeping and home maintenance are denied. Then her income replacement benefits get denied again. Her insurance payments are stopped. She applies for mediation, which is the mandatory next step. Couldn't go to the court or anything like that. And in mediation, it came to an end. The mediator released his report. There was a 2-year limitation period from the refusal to pay benefits to commence a proceeding in court to contest the denial. That limitation period gets extended because of the length of time that the mediator provides their report. Doesn't this all sound very familiar?
Very familiar.
And so she files an application before their internal appeal tribunal, which is dismissed as being time barred. She applies for reconsideration. That's dismissed. And she has no right of appeal because the right of appeal under the Ontario License Appeal Tribunal Act says you can only do a statutory appeal on the basis of questions of law. So she files a judicial review. And the Ontario government, or the insurer, argues, and the Ontario government joins in this and says, you can't judicially review because the legislation provides only for a statutory appeal. So there is no right of judicial review in those circumstances. Or if there is a right of judicial review, it's only in extremely limited circumstances, which would not apply here.
Jurisdiction or something like that, I guess.
Yes. And so the Supreme Court of Canada unanimously, which never happens now, allows the appeal and sends it back to an adjudicator. And they essentially say that pursuant to the law in Vavilov, a right of appeal does not preclude a person from seeking judicial review for questions not dealt with in the appeal. In this case, they say, despite the statutory right of appeal limited questions of law, judicial review is available for questions of fact or mixed fact and law. And it is then up to the discretion of the reviewing judge whether or not to undertake the judicial review. And the conclusion that a judicial review would only apply in exceptional circumstances where there is a limited statutory right of appeal is wrong, that it is essentially wrong to say that judicial review can only be limited to rare cases, because legislative intent is it can't be used to restrict access to judicial review or to interfere with the supervisory function of the court.
Wow, there's a lot to unpack there. Fascinating. There's some sort of significant implications when everything is being tribunalized.
Mm-hmm.
The court is saying the superior courts are not losing any jurisdiction to be able to step in. And even a issue of fact, if it's an issue of fact that hasn't been considered. So, yep. Because that becomes a mistake of law, I guess.
Yep, exactly. So this has a big...
implications for everybody who's dealing with a tribunal for an immediate roadside prohibition or something along that line, and they're appealing it.
Yep. big implication and probably instructive to what happens with the limitations on the right to judicial review in ICDC cases in BC.
Yeah, for sure. And that's an interesting thing because we've seen this now repeated. The court has refused to allow the government to oust their jurisdiction as a supervisory role.
Yes.
Because that's the whole point of having superior courts.
Yep. So there you go. That's a good decision from the Supreme Court of Canada. And surprising to me that it is a unanimous decision.
I'm surprised that we got a good decision, let alone being unanimous.
The Supreme Court of Canada has been okay.
Vavilov could have fixed things.
That IP address case was good.
Sure. Great. Does nothing for us when it comes to tribunals basically making factual findings to get to results. That is something that our courts have failed us on, I think, and I'm hoping that one day somebody comes along and has the right case and is able to persuade the court that tribunal shouldn't work backward.
Well,
I know they say that they shouldn't work backwards, but that's in reality versus the ostensible position that the courts take are two different things.
Okay, so here we have Paul now.
The ridiculous driver of the week.
The reviews are in. This book has been a lifesaver. If you haven't bought a copy yet, I can't recommend it enough. Thanks to the pinpoint method, I feel like I now have concrete strategies I can employ for difficult situations. Published by LexisNexis, Cross-Examination the Pinpoint Method is an essential addition to your bookshelf. Order now.
Excellent. Let's go.
So this is in honor of our trip to Salt Lake City.
Oh, okay. Good.
A Utah school bus driver who is accused of arson, both in federal and state court, for allegedly lighting his school bus on fire.
Oh, my goodness. So that's a real twist.
Yeah.
Usually the school bus cases, when I see them, are either the school bus driver is a real creep or the school bus driver is drunk. This is a new school bus driver turn.
The thing...
Arsonist school bus driver.
The thing that really gets me on this is that this school bus driver lit his bus on fire.
Okay. Like before school started, so he didn't have to work?
Well, there were 42 children inside the bus.
Oh, my gosh.
Used an ignition device to start the fire.
The kids get out?
Continued to drive. The incident was captured on video. I guess the kids got out. But then, riddle me this. So that was February 2022. He kept driving. There's 42 kids on board. There's like the bus is filling with smoke, and it's all captured on video. So they know he did it. They could see what happened. Yet somehow, just about a year later, in April 2023, with these charges still outstanding, he set a second school bus on fire while driving it, also captured on video, and on this occasion attempting to tamper with the surveillance system.
Okay, so two times. Once he does it and he's still driving the bus.
I promise I won't light the bus fire with kids on.
This isn't driving law. This is employment law. You can't fire somebody just because they lit a school bus on fire. It would be a human rights violation. He's clearly got a psychological problem.
He actually does because while they're conducting the investigation into the second school bus,
he lights his pants on fire.
In October of 2023, weirdly, his home and his personal vehicle get damaged by fire.
No, I think I can speculate at this point that he's trying to set up a defense to say that somebody's trying to get him and that he's a victim. So he probably the second time he lit it on fire to say that the school bus people were.
No, because when he was arrested, he told the police that he'd previously set his home on fire prior to this occasion, and also that there were two other incidents of setting school buses on fire while driving them that he had been involved in, that he just chalked up to.
So again, it's a psychological issue, and of course he can't be fired, so they had to keep him on his job because it's just something he needs to work with, but you can't send him to counseling.
Yeah.
So...
Well, he'd been a school bus driver for 25 years.
I guess you can write him up.
Yep.
Make a note in his file.
What?
Spoke with Bob, promised not to light any more school buses on fire.
What?
If he feels any school bus fire lighting urges, he intends to speak to me first. That's the end of the memo in the employee file.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a disturbing one. So that one was in Utah. All right. I would like you to promise one thing to me.
Which is?
Never say riddle me this again, because I just freaked out by the word riddle from the Riddler on the old Batman show, because I could never figure out those riddles. And so I don't like that phrase. It's answer, tell me this, or, you know, give, let's discuss this issue. Please don't. I'm just, I could never figure out the riddles. Of course, nobody could. I realize that now, but I've got some personal trauma. So, okay.
Okay. Okay.
Just ask and do that one. Do me a favor there. Do me a solid.
Worry about your personal trauma, but okay.
All right. So, you know, I'm just Ken going through my head for days. I was about to end the podcast by saying, I'm just Ken. Go ahead and end our podcast.
Well, thank you for tuning in to another episode of Driving Law. If you need to reach us because you lit a school bus on fire while driving it, maybe don't. But if you did and you need us, you can give us a call at 604-685-8889. And if you need to find us online, we're at VancouverCriminalLaw.com. Tune in next week for another exciting episode of Driving Law.